Hey everybody, welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is Sean. Today, we'll be talking about Schwab slashing its rates for its brokerage platform, and we'll talk about SoFi providing cryptocurrency trading for its clients. Click subscribe to follow this and many more exciting stories on the FinTech Newscast. See what's going on. So a lot happened this week in the fintech space. No shortage of stories. What's going on with Schwab? I heard that they're battling startups to reduce their fees and stay relevant in the brokerage space. What's happening?
Yeah, this is a really interesting story, maybe 40 to 50 years in the making. So back when Schwab started in the 1970s, the whole concept was that they would give you, you know, very low cost brokerage fees as consumers. So, you know, the metric that I've heard is that back in the 70s, you have to pay your broker between $40 and $50, that's non-inflation adjusted, by the way, to execute a trade. Schwab came into the market and said, no, we're going to actually make this
very
low.
$50 per trade?
Per trade, yeah. Jeez. Isn't that amazing?
Schwab, no millennial would go for that.
No, absolutely no. Not. Yeah. It was a very, it was an interesting customer demographic there. But the whole thing is that they came in and said, you know what, this is too high. We're going to make it, you know, we're in California. We're going to make the thing a lot more affordable and more accessible to the rest of the market. So they came in with very low fee structures. Cut forward 50 years later, and we have another challenger in the space. And that one is, of course, Robinhood. So Robinhood, as you may know, will charge you absolutely zero to make a trade. And now Schwab, I think, is responding to price pressure from Robinhood and other challengers to basically reduce their brokerage fees to now absolutely nothing.
So Robinhood just driven the price down.
That's the argument. I mean, Robinhood has been around since 2013, 14, I think. So it's taken Schwab a couple of years to respond. But I think that if you look at it in terms of trading volumes, there's definitely been some movement away from the Schwab and TD Ameritrade and Fidelity's of the world into a platform like Robinhood.
So does Schwab have any competitive advantage to justify higher fees? What value do I have going to Schwab now versus a Robinhood? Because it sounds like Robinhood is really providing good value and cutting fees down. So is there an advantage to staying with Schwab?
Yeah, there are actually quite a number of advantages to go to Schwab. You know, I think they have a broader set of products that you can use. That's one. The other is that you again have the backing of an actual well-known institution, unlike Robinhood. And also we should also mention that from Schwab's perspective, they don't make most of their money from trading commissions. They actually make their money on net interest margin. So that
just
means
the float, right?
Just the float. Yeah. Basically, the more cash that I have in a Schwab account, they're giving me a very low percentage yield, and they get to keep whatever APY they get as well. So that's how they make money. And I think I've read somewhere that they make something like 65% of their revenue come from that, and not from trading commissions. So I think their strategy here is that by lowering commissions, they can increase the volume of trade, they can attract new customers, and again, increase their AUM.
Got it. So is that a good savings product? Is an APY rate on that product good?
No, it's horrible. It's never a good strategy from a money investment perspective to keep cash in your investments. You always want to have your money work for you, either by putting it in equities and bonds and ETFs, whatever the vehicle may be. But having cash is not a good value prop for the customer. It's much better for the company than for the customer.
So what's next? I mean, it's just a zero fees for trades. Do you think Robinhood and other startups are going to try to continue to entice their users with other benefits, and then Schwab will have to continue playing catch up? Or
there may be other features that are coming on the pike. You know, famously last year or earlier this year, it feels like forever, but Betterment introduced a cash management account, and I think that's something that Schwab could do. Schwab, of course, also has a robo advisor, so they're actually trying to keep in front of their competition, or keep at least, you know, maintain some differentiated moat from their perspective. But this means that we basically entered a brave new world when it comes to fees at zero. And interestingly enough, after Schwab made the announcement, their shares fell by 10%.
Whoa.
Which is a significant drop. But it's actually even worse if you're at TD Ameritrade. Their shares fell an astounding 25%. In one day.
One day.
Which Whoa. Is incredible. And again, speaks Ooh. To sort of the pressure that you get from outsider challenges like Robinhood to really decrease or eliminate altogether, you know, commission fees.
Yeah, and this is related to the story we were talking about a few weeks ago, you know, the concept of in the next 5 to 10 years, the amount of market share to be won by startups against big banks is much more than you would initially think, tens of billions. So this is the beginning of that.
It is, yeah, yeah. And it's also, I think that to put it in context here, this also comes, you know, in the middle of a very low interest rate environment. And again, Schwab makes their money by having, by getting higher interest than they give you as a customer if you keep cash in your accounts. And now that we're getting to essentially very, very low interest rates, now I forget what it is now, but it's like 1 point something, it means that they have fewer avenues of making money by focusing on the net interest margin. So essentially, they have to find other ways to increase revenue and reduce costs.
What's the best saving product that you've seen out there, like just currently as of date? I know we talked about Marcus by Goldman having a really good savings product in terms of the APY, but what have you seen? Like, are startups beating that rate, or what? You know, what are the best players in terms of APY?
That's a really great question. I think it depends on your risk tolerance. I would argue that you're better off putting your money into the equity space right now, because you know, even though the market's up and down, you can still get some return from that. A CD is another instrument that you can use to kind of, you know, get a little bit of return. It's not a lot, but it's some return on your cash. But for me personally, what I use is a high yield interest bearing account online. So you can go to Ally or even Amex, and they all have products that will return between 1% and 2% essentially, or Marcus as well. And again, it's FDIC insured and it's fairly safe. It's just you're getting a very minimal return on your cash.
And you don't have the advantage of going to brick and mortar locations. So these are for like Allied and Amex are going to be all online, right? So.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if you put your money into a Wall Street bank, you're not going to get anything back essentially. If you put your money in Chase or Wells Fargo or Citi, it's so low that it's basically non-existent.
That's exciting. So the fight between incumbents and startups for market share in the brokerage space is continuing in a really exciting way.
Yeah, but just one quick word of warning for our users. Of course, if you now have essentially free trades, you may be incentivized to actually do more trading. And study after study after study after study has concluded that for retail investors, the more you trade, the more likely you are to actually lose money. So even though it's free, kids, don't go out there and start trading stocks.
Be safe with your trades.
Be safe with your trades. Exactly. Be safe with your trades and don't increase your volume just because it's free.
Friends don't let friends trade without proper information.
They sure don't, or they shouldn't anyway. Speaking of friends, Sean, what's up at SoFi?
So SoFi has done something really exciting. They announced that they're going to be launching a trading platform for their users to trade Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. So these are the first digital assets available on their platform. This is in the midst of SoFi having a bit of trouble, though. At the end of 2018, they laid off about 7% of their workforce.
Jesus.
Yeah, and they've been experimenting with new products. They've been experimenting with loans, with mortgages, and now Anthony Noto, the CEO of SoFi.
Who came from Twitter, I believe, right? Twitter and Goldman before that, yeah.
I think so, yeah, during all the shakeup. Right. He has said at the request of his clients that he wants to launch this platform to allow you to trade three digital assets. This is a big move. I mean, this is another institutional stamp by a market leader, SoFi, a stamp for cryptocurrency and the veracity of cryptocurrency in the space. So exciting for the crypto enthusiasts like myself. And Coinbase is going to be tapped to provide the firm's crypto liquidity, as they announced in February. So this partnership is going to allow customers to track crypto price movements, make trades amongst the existing suite of app-based investing options, which include ETFs and like automated active stock buying.
Interesting. So I'm wondering, what is SoFi's strategy here? Are they just doing this because their customers are clamoring to trade in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin, or is there anything else beyond this? Is there any opportunity they see in the cryptocurrency trading space that would make them get into this?
Yeah. So I think there are a few reasons. I think the first and foremost reason is they want to try to stay relevant. So they're seeing this trend. They're seeing their clients want to trade cryptocurrency, and they want to keep their platform sticky. We want to keep people on their platform, so they're offering that as a service. The second thing is just pure money. They're going to be adding a 1.5% fee in the coming weeks Right now, they have an incentive. They're giving their users a bonus if the first amount of Bitcoin that they trade. But after that, they're going to start hiking up fees and then make money off these trades.
This is pretty interesting because it actually points to kind of a conflicting dynamic between, you know, the Schwab story we just discussed and then SoFi charging you. So why is Schwab letting you buy Netflix and Tesla for free while SoFi wants to charge you 1.25% for trading Bitcoin or Litecoin?
So it's a riskier asset class, right? SoFi wants to take a cut of these trades, a 1.25% fee. Because they understand it's riskier, this offering may not last forever, and they do want to make incremental profit, incremental capital on this approach, even if it doesn't last forever. So it's an interesting strategy. They're staying relevant. They're likely going to be attracting younger account holders as a result. If you look at, you know, millennials and taking out mortgages, those rates have gone down. So we're starting to see like a platform like SoFi that offers mortgages. That may not be a really good incentive for millennials because they're not taking out as many mortgages, but they're trading cryptocurrency.
Right.
So it's an interesting test that SoFi has launched. It should be exciting to see how it pans out.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I'm always sort of shocked at how the Main Street banks, even your Goldman Sachs, will not allow their clients to trade in cryptocurrencies, or they've really taken their time to explore the option. But it seems like all the new entrants are really diving in feet first.
Yeah, and who knows if that's the right move? I personally think it is because I do believe in the power of cryptocurrency and in leveling out the financial world. But there are still a lot of skeptics, and there are skeptics, you know, like Goldman, for example, who hasn't offered that yet for its users. But who knows? That may change soon. I mean, this is a really positive move, though, because it's another institutional player speaking to this trend of further approval of cryptocurrency as a form of payment. All right, now it's time for our final bites. We're going to give you each a number and the story behind it. Steve, what do you got?
I have a really awesome number. So I grew up taking the New York City subway. I remember tokens. I remember the MetroCard. I remember carrying a wallet.
Do you remember the rats too?
I remember the rats. Very not fondly, but very well. I remember.
Did you ever see the Rat Dragon Pizza?
Oh my God!
Did you ever actually see that?
You mean Pizza Rat?
Pizza Rat.
Only on video, never in person.
Never saw a live Pizza Rat.
No, I've seen many of rats in the subway, but never a Pizza Rat per se.
I wonder if he does shows now because he knows how popular he is.
Famous, yeah. Absolutely. He's a YouTube sensation. Absolutely, he's famous online. yeah. So anyway, so you know, again, I grew up carrying, you know, stacks of tokens to get around the subway, but now you can actually pay with just your credit card. How cool is that? I think we're catching up to London and Singapore maybe 10 to 15 years later. The MTA, which runs the New York City subways, in case you're not aware, announced that after introducing a program to pay with your debit or credit card 2.5 months ago, the city had recorded a total of 1.1 million rides. That's pretty impressive. You can just tap your card directly onto the turnstile and off you go to your delayed train.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you know, another step in the right direction for a cashless environment, right?
It certainly is. It is a contactless payment in our largest subway system in the country. So it's pretty impressive.
Got it. Very cool. Nice. Yeah. And that could be a really good trend for other, metropolitan areas in the country. And New York may set the, you know, precedent for how those operate. Awesome. Thanks, Steve. So my number is 82%. That's the number of individuals in the U.S. consumers who would use a blockchain token in existing loyalty programs. Now, the caveat here is these are individuals who already know about blockchain technology. They're familiar with it. Of that group, 82%, roughly 8 out of 10, would use blockchain tokens in existing loyalty programs. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, this is a study by KPMG. Talking about how if there was an option to leverage distributed technology and tokenization within an existing loyalty program, they would do it.
This seems like a really high number, by the way.
Yeah, it's a high number, and this is only of the third who are highly familiar with the defining properties of blockchain-based tokens. So about of that group, 82% would would use those forms of payment within loyalty reward schemes. So that's a very important delineation. Not everyone knows about blockchain-based tokens. It's about what this study says is about a third are highly familiar with the defining properties. And those 82% of that group would use them as a form of payment. And this is exciting. I mean, you look at high loyalty industries like, you know, restaurants, fast food shops, coffee shops, electronic companies, banks and credit card companies. This is an opportunity for those industries to leverage blockchain-based tokens for as a form of payment, given this number is fairly large. Now, I think it's going to be contingency on those individuals that don't know about blockchain technology learning about it. So it's an exciting number of those who are familiar with blockchain technology. There's a great amount of them that would use it. I think the big question is, how do we get those who are not familiar with it engaged?
It's a great question. I think that this kind of speaks to the widespread adoption of DLT in general, and I do like the use case of using it as a rails on which to run your loyalty programs. But yeah, we'll see.
And that could be a good like foray for blockchain based tokens like Bitcoin to start with rewards programs. Start with things that are already being leveraged. So start like you said. Operate on those rails, see what happens, see what kind of the usage rates are, maybe run some basic tests on the stickiness of that kind of platform, and then potentially magnify that out to the greater public.
Great stuff. We'll keep an eye on that.
Thanks, Steve. That's it for us from the FinTech Newscast. Click subscribe to follow this and many more exciting stories in the FinTech space. Talk to you next week.
See you later.